Blog Talk Radio.
Happy birthday. Yeah. We want to dedicate this song to everyone who has a birthday today. And that means you, and you, and you, and you. Because having a birthday is a special occasion. And we hope you have a happy celebration and a many, many more to come.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Birthday. Yeah. We want to dedicate this song to everyone who has a birthday today. And that means you, and you, and you, and you. Because having a birthday is a special occasion. And we hope you have a happy celebration and a many, many more to come.
To try this one more time. You are live on A Book Is Born. Hello, Darian. Welcome to A Book Is Born. No one could hear my intro in the beginning, so let me just say I am pleased to welcome to A Book Is Born by Gumbo Fetasso International and Tribe Family Channel, author Darian Tanner. Now, I'm not going to even read and go back over everything that I just went over. I'm just going to get right to the interview. I heard you saying hello, hello, and you could not hear me. And I apologize to our audience for that difficulty, but I do want to welcome you and everyone to season two of A Book is Born, and we're excited to get the 411 about your new page turners. So we're going to just jump right into it. Darian, tell me a little bit about yourself and your writing journey.
Okay, and also I just want to say thanks for having me and thanks for the opportunity to be able to talk about the writing process and the book. And so I'm very appreciative of that. Well, again, my name is Darian Tanner. I am a high school English teacher. I teach 10th grade English. I've been teaching now. This is my 11th year teaching secondary ed. I taught in Michigan, and then now I'm teaching here in Florida. I was born and raised in East St. Louis, a small city called East St. Louis, Illinois. Have an identical twin sister and a brother. Just grew up in a two-parent home in East St. Louis. Loved school, always loved school. Had aunties that were teachers and principals and superintendents. Had great teachers. And so just always loved education. And so that's kind of where that all took off for me. But also loved writing. I happen to have, my father is a writer. He's a poet. And so I think I got a lot of my writing ability from my dad. And I used to do a whole lot of writing when I was young. I'm just writing stories, and I used to write in my journal. I did write poetry. I recited poetry for a while. I was an English major, and I'm an English teacher, so I've always loved literature, books, writing, the writing process, writing essays and things of that nature. It was even to the point when I was in college, you know, my college mates would always, you know, it'd be Thursday, Friday night, Saturday, I'm locked in my room writing all day, and, you know, stacks of journals, and, you know, they were always and so they were like, you know, she would say, one particular, she would say, well, I mean, what's going on? I'll have to check on you. Everything okay? You're always writing. And, you know, and I thought about that. And for years, I've always been a writer. I started being journaling a lot. My mentor, her name is Dr. Stacia Pierce. She's kind of geared me towards how to do, you know, better with writing and journals, you know, things and writing about something versus just writing thoughts, but just kind of getting to content and developing my writing outside of the classes that I took at Michigan State. And but I never did anything with it too much. You know, I just had stacks of writing, and I'm not sure if it was a confidence issue or, you know, just a fear, because I did a lot about, you know, I went through some self-image things, did a lot of writing there. Again, like a lot of my poetry was about self-image. You know, so like I said, I've always loved writing. It was like an escape because I am a quiet person. I'm not a very boisterous person, so I am quiet, but I took to a lot of writing. And so that's kind of what, you know, so like I said, that's something I've loved to do my whole entire life, literally since elementary school. All I did was write, and it really didn't form into anything until my latter years. So, yeah, so that's where the journey kind of started for me, with writing and teaching kind of both in one. It was a given thing. It was something that I was raised in, and I believe partially a gift. Like I said, my father was a writer, and my grandmother was as well. So it was kind of something that made run in the family.
Wow, that's interesting. That's very interesting. Well, that does answer a lot about, you know, where you're writing, where you're from, where your writing journey began, and how it matriculated and continued on and strengthened from there. And it also answers what motivated you to become a writer. How many books have you published?
Just two. Well, I'm not going to say just. you know,
yeah, don't
around,
say
you know,
just,
friends,
but
friends.
Two.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but yeah,
yeah,
two,
I like that.
Two books. Two books I've published.
Oh, awesome.
So far.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. What are the titles of your books, and how did you come up with the ideas for them?
Well, the first one was an e-book, and it was in 2016 that I published it. It was self-published. It's called Finally Some Answers, and it deals with what happened was when I started reaching out and helping teachers with classroom management and just different things going on with the students in the classroom, I would get tons and tons of questions, just left and right emails, Facebook DMs, the Instagram, just lots of questions, personal questions, like people I would meet, lots of questions. And so I just decided one day to, I said, I'm just going to answer this, you know, in a book form. So I took 50 of those questions, and I decided to answer them by using stories. So if you're looking to find some answers ebook, it's 50 questions that I answered, and they all have like little small stories. So I literally have like 50 chapters. They're about 2 to 3 pages a piece, but I answer all of those 50 questions in story form. And so that was the first book.
Oh, okay.
So again, just wanted to reach out and help teachers, secondary ed teachers, with classroom management things, or just student, like that's my niche as far as the classroom is concerned, just working with students and engagement and behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to do that. And so that was the whole motivation behind writing that in 2016. And if I could be really honest, I've always thought that publishing a book was difficult and, you know, that it would take a whole lot of money. And it was just something, even though I was a writer, I just had to become more confident, you know, in thinking that I could actually have a book. Not saying that ebooks are wonderful or great. I could do another one, but I just, you know, I wanted to have a book, you know, a paperback book or a hardcover book, finally some answers, but I just wasn't quite ready to step out there and actually get, you know, actually go through the process of finding the book cover and getting that and getting the books printed and made. And so I had that ebook out, and that was Finally Some Answers in 2016. And so that was that. And then recently, a couple of years ago, I received an opportunity to take on a position at my school to be a teacher mentor, and I had, which would give me the opportunity to work with the first and second year teachers on our campus. And that afforded me the experience of stepping out of my classroom, because sometimes you're just in your classroom and all you know is what goes on in your classroom. But I was able to step out into other classrooms, and I learned a lot. And I had and I saw that some of the major issues, you know, with teacher authority and just, you know, again, the behavior issues, but it was just on a different level. And so, again, I was inspired to do Teacher Authority in the Classroom, which is the recent book I published in this year, actually, August of this year. Teacher Authority in the Classroom is not a battle, it's a bargain. And so that, again, my love for teachers and just helping out in that arena, I wrote that book, and then that was actually a paperback book, and actually got that published in August. So that's kind of both were inspired by teaching.
Congratulations to both of your publications, and I'm sure that they are very interesting, empowering, enlightening, and probably aid in a lot of what the challenges are that the students and the teachers face. Earlier in the green room, I asked you about the perspective that your latest book plays when it comes to parents. And I was interested in that because as a parent, I faced some challenges where, you know, the classroom, the school, or this, you know, I won't say policies, but I'll say some teachers' practices were different than others. As a very hands-on parent, I was just wondering, what does your book offer in terms of the perspective as it relates to the parents, since you do address the educators and the students? Because I believe the parents should absolutely not only respect the authority of the teacher in the classroom, but have their students prepared, their children prepared to respect authority. And if there's any problems, they don't deal with the problems and cross that line. I couldn't even imagine my kids in school these days. But how do you deal with parents with respect to teacher authority?
Okay, it actually, the first couple of chapters are about the parents, in a sense of the whole book is just what the teachers can do. Like, that's the whole center, because I'm not a parent myself at this moment. And so I pride myself on writing from my experience and my, you know, my story, because sometimes you don't really know the other perspective. I can know the parent perspective because I'm not a parent. So I wrote from the teacher perspective, but I did talk about the parents in the first couple of chapters. The first one of the chapters is called the Nobel Prize Winners. And what I did was I researched how many Nobel Prize winners were minorities, particularly African American. And there were 16. And then when I found out there were 16 of them, I went back to their childhood, and I was able to link their success to a parent of some sort, or a grandparent, something that these 16 people that got these Nobel Prizes, MLK, Obama, Nelson Mandela, I just looked at their childhood, and I was like, wow, all of their stories depicted the influence of a parent or a grandparent. And so my whole point of putting that in the book was to let teachers know, like, listen, when we look at these influential people of our time and these people who got these amazing, you know, this amazing accomplishment, this amazing award, you know, we look back and see how valuable their parents were to them. And, you know, from talking to the teacher, I'm like, look how valuable this is. We parents are very important. And, you know, and we need them, and look what parents are able to do. But unfortunately, generally speaking, that's not our case. Our students don't have the parents in their lives to that degree. So in a sense, we have to have that in the back of our mind. So I'm like, okay, so here's what we got to deal with, because again, I'm going from the perspective that teachers are blaming the parents a lot. Which I said, this is a very controversial thing, because all of us have factors in this whole idea. So I don't know if I want to put, you know, I don't know to put how much percentage to what the parents' fault. I think all of us, not I think, I know all of us have a factor, but I'm looking to them like, listen, this is the look how valuable the parents were. This is it. And our students don't have this today. You know, so that was my perspective there. So I talked about the parents in that sense. Look how valuable they are. And unfortunately, a lot of our students don't have that influence. So we have to figure out a way to do what we can do in the classroom if our parents aren't going to be involved in that way. And then I went to, what's the name of that chapter? The Monster Hurdle. And I talked about, and
Pin that for me and let me expound with you on the aforementioned. And I am, you know, I love the perspective, and what it brings out and what it details is that you're right. It is very imperative that the parents play a integral role in their children's education, so much so that they are, because the parents are the first line teacher. And
they are.
The parents, yes, they're the first line teacher, and are responsible for preparing their child for the outside environment as it relates to education, and being prepared to show up to learn. And I was just talking with a diversity coach, motivator, doctor that I met earlier. We had a conference call today, and we went into this very thing, because as a parent myself, my thing is that I am the first line. I should be telling the teacher what my child's characteristics are and what my child's strengths are and what my child's learning challenges are. I am supposed to know my child inside and out. I'm not supposed to be dropping off my child and then leaving it up to the educators and the school to figure out who's little Timmy and what does little Timmy like, you know. And unfortunately, we're living in such a different landscape as to when my children were in school. My youngest is 24. She'll be 25 in June. But as a very hands-on parent, it's, you know, it's just amazing how the landscape is today. And, of course, you know, our connection is through a host from our sister station, Teacher Talks, Stacey McClam. And she deals with post-traumatic, you know, secondary traumatic stress. And that is the stressors that the children are carrying into the classroom. And so it's a whole different dynamic, like you said, in terms of the parents. And, of course, not all parents. We're not generalizing and saying, hey, no one has parents. But we're not ostriches with our heads in the sand, like there's no issues with the children in the schools. And you know, it's going to come to a head, because there has to be solutions sought, and everyone is an integral player. And so that's why I wanted to ask you the question as it relates to the perspective of the parent when you address the educators and the students. And then you were going to tell me an additional chapter that you were going to expound upon, if you will.
Well, it was just, it's called the monster hurdle, and I just related it to a track or running a race analogy, and how the parents, again, this is, and this is where I really get into what you just said about the parents being the first teacher. Like, the parents are at the start of the race, you know, and so, and we need that important piece at the beginning of the race, and sometimes the baton is, you know, the baton is dropped, and sometimes it's not. So I just, again, my perspective more so with the book is letting the teachers know how valuable the parents are, and that if they played a part in, and because I mean, I see it all the time. A lot of my students that I'm, even sometimes if I have discipline issues and I get a parent that's concerned and a parent that helps me, I mean, it's a wonderful experience. I mean, it's an awesome experience. And so I know. So my whole point with the book was just getting the teachers to know that the parents are valuable. But, you know, in reality, we don't see very many of them. It's not very many like you at this point, as far as my experience. There are some, but it's not generally, we don't have a whole lot, especially at the high school level. In the middle school and high school level, from what I experienced and just my my colleagues, we don't get a chance to see a lot of parents. You know, a lot of parent meetings are made, and we probably counseled 6, 7, 8 parent meetings this year already, you know, because, again, it could be something. I'm not saying anything about the parent, but I'm just saying the connection is not there, so we're not afforded the opportunity to have parents really involved at the high school level like they should and like we would want them to. And so, again, the whole book is focusing on what can a teacher do. We can't control the parent. So what can we do? So we know that they're valuable, and we know we have some that are helping, and it's great. But what can we do in the classroom with what we have and what we can work with? And so I definitely, the parents open up the book. Because, like I said, I'm a firm believer that the parents, the parents open up the book. Because I'm like, there is no way. You know what I'm saying? This is just it as a person who was raised by good parents, you know what I'm saying? And again, knowing good parents and having kids with, and I don't even want to say good parents because, again, there's a lot of factors into why parents are, and like I said, I'm not a parent myself, but I'm just saying parents are involved and engaged in their students' learning. We just don't see that a lot, and sometimes the teachers kind of just stand still and say, okay, parents, no parents, oh well, and to kind of let the situation go, and I'm like, okay, even if we don't have the parents, though they're the beginning, they're the foundation, they're everything we need to have right now, let's see what we can do as educators with what we have to work with. Let's see if we can work with this kid, you know, these students with, you know, our relationship, and then we can, you know, just do what we can with what we have. So,
but you know, I really – go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying, so like I said, the parents, you guys are definitely the opening chapter. After I talk about why I wrote the book, you guys come in right there because it's important.
Well, you know, and I can really appreciate what you're doing because it's right there saying to the teachers that it is important to find a way to embrace the invitation, welcoming the parents, saying, hey, we do need you and we do want and welcome your involvement. It goes back to it takes a village to raise a child. You know, the parent is on the front line, the first teacher, bringing their child to school, dropping them off. A lot of challenges have to do with work commitments and hours. A lot of challenges have to do with older relatives taking care of children and or absent parents from the home, just different dynamics and challenges. But I'm glad that your book definitely highlights that there is a need to find, there's a critical need to find a avenue that actually helps the cohesion of parent, teacher, and child, because it takes all of us for that child to be successful. And when that teacher knows that, and I'm speaking from a parent's perspective, obviously I'm not, I will say I'm a teacher. I'm a teacher from the point of having raised four adult children and the founder of a literacy program, I started my literacy program at my kitchen table because if my child is running around with you and you have been held back two grades, you might need to come sit at my kitchen table if you're going to be playing with my child. Otherwise, we're going to break up. Okay, this is a breakup. We're breaking up right here today. You know, but when the teachers have known that they had my full support, oh my goodness, it was overwhelming. I was welcomed to field trips and, you know, assisting in the classroom and helping, you know, man some of the different tables for the activities. And I'll tell you a funny story. My daughter, I think she was like in the second or third grade, and I was managing the bingo games at the table, right? Passing out candy for bingoing. And this particular table of children, none of them won, and I didn't give anyone any candy. My daughter. My daughter, in the second grade, she said, "You could have slipped me something." No, I couldn't. Okay, bingo. I could have slipped something, but you didn't win, and I wanted that to be a lesson that they could actually walk away with, okay? You all lost, and there is nothing lost in losing. Just go to the next table and try your luck there. You know, and I just really wanted them to understand the concept at such a young age that life is not going to be, you know, well, slip me a little something. Well, you know, I didn't give my daughter any favor. I didn't give the kids a win. Yeah. And then, mind you, they're in the second grade, but I'm in there. I'm playing hardball with you, okay? If you didn't line up bingo, you didn't bingo. But, but there's always a lesson. Yeah, well, there's the lesson therein, and there's a moral to it. And, you know, we can't underestimate these genius minds. And so that was like, I meant to do that because I did not underestimate the fact that they knew that they didn't legitimately win. And when you don't legitimately win, you may not get a prize at on that round.
Now, it's interesting. I mean, I know you didn't mean for this to, but what you're, the analogy, what you're talking about, the lesson that you taught your daughter in second grade and her classmates is something that we're seeing now in the education system with grades, with school grades. And so, you know, a lot of things like, well, I tried, I did this, you know, I turned in, you told me two pages, but I turned in the paragraph, I tried. And so, and then the parents like, okay, well, they tried it. So how did my kid get an F? You know, just different things. So you teach them that it is you actually fail. And so a lot of times, you know, I don't do a lot of multiple choice tests at all, really. But we have district assessments that are multiple choice. And so it's seven questions. And, you know, a kid gets five of them wrong. And I put it in grade book. And, you know, parents are like, you know, kids are like, I'm like, well, you have a 2 out of 7, you know, so it's okay that you fail, but I got to give you what you got, you know, what you earned. I mean, we'll work on building on that, but it's amazing to see the philosophy, the mindset of the students. It's just that I tried, I did something, you gave me an F, and it never fails every time. You know, we ended the semester, and the kids are like, Ms. Tanner, how'd you give me a 43%? And I said, and I always correct them, and I said, how did I what? And they don't catch on to it, and they eventually get it. Oh, okay, now how did you give me? How did I earn it? Because, I'm like, this is what you got. You know, I'm not going to, you know, we can't hide it, and we have to do that with parents too. And they're like, well, what can we do? I was like, ma'am, I'm not giving a student something. You know, kids who have to make up an assignment, and they missed a whole 5-page something. And the parent wants them to make it up to the paragraph. Like, no, it doesn't, you know, it's not fair. But, I mean, some of the parents had that mentality, too. So I just thought I'd mention that because that, if you didn't, you know, you teach it, I'm looking at that second grade, and it's like, oh, everybody wins, and it's okay, you tried, you should get, no, you know what I'm saying? No, we lose, and we fail, and, you know, stuff like that. And so I'm seeing it now in high school. Yeah, but I just thought I'd mention that because it's so equated with what you said in that lesson, but that's definitely what you're saying now in the education system. They didn't stop it in second grade like you did, and so now we see it in 10th grade. So,
Well, and you know, the landscape is so different now, and you know, there's this this I want to say culture of lackadaisy, you know, give me a pass. Everyone feels as though they should get a pass or get a get some sort of you know, get some sort of solid for something that they didn't do or didn't put enough effort into. And so I just want to remind our listeners that you are tuned into A Book Is Born, live on Tribe Family Channel at Gumbo for the Soul International Family Brand, created, owned, and operated by yours truly, Beverly. And our guest this evening is Darian Tanner. You would think that you were listening to a show about education, but this is actually a show about her writing journey. It's just so interesting, the books that you're writing about and the content therein. So let me ask you, well, you know what, let's take a quick commercial break. And I do want to thank our listeners for holding. I do see your lines there. And we will actually take some questions. But let's go to a commercial break, and we'll come right back here on A Book Is Born right after this.
I know building a website can be intimidating, but you need a place where your audience can connect with you. Instead of fighting with technology, try the easiest, most flexible website builder available. With templates for all types of websites, ranging from landing pages to e-commerce, Urban Book Editor's platform makes creating an author website quick and easy. Just add a section, upload your photos and videos, type your text, and you're in business. It couldn't be easier. And if you signed up for an annual plan, you can get 10% off the first year. Just use discount code FIRSTYEAR. That's 1-STYEAR. The number 1-STYEAR in all caps. Take advantage of the 14-day free trial. No credit card is needed. Visit urbanbookeditor.com and select Create Your Author Website from the menu bar at the top of the page. No more struggling with technology. No more paying a small fortune to developers. Create beautiful websites without learning to code. Spend more time writing and less time worrying about your website. Just go to urbanbookeditor.com and select Create Your Author Website. You'll see how easy it is to build a great website to showcase your work. Go to urbanbookeditor.com and select Create Your Author Website today.
You know the name.
You saw their story on Undone.
You remember the hits.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for the legendary Shy Life featuring Marshall Thompson.
For over 50 years, the legendary Shy Lights have performed all over the world to standing room only crowds.
And now here's a brand new book
from the only original remaining member of this fabulous group.
The book is entitled Last Man Standing by Marshall Thompson, which chronicles the group's rise to fame with two number one hits and dozens of Billboard top 10 hits.
The Shy Lights were forced to be reckoned with. Last Man Standing is the story of a personal side of a man who sang about love, romance, and dreams. It will have you laughing out loud one moment and tearing at your heartstrings the very next. Last Man Standing by the legendary Marshall Thompson. Available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and eBooks.
Welcome back live on Tribe Family Channel 2, A Book Is Born, a Gumbo for the Soul International Family Brand, created, owned, and operated by yours truly, Beverly Black. And I want to invite you to our calls for submissions. Please visit www.gumbofortheSoulInternational.com. Our current open calls for submissions consist of Women of Honor 2, the second installment in our anthology based on breast cancer and health issues that affect women. The foreword is written by Dr. Yvonne Sion. She is the mother of the famed comedian David Chappelle, or Dave Chappelle, I should say. We also have the second installment of Men of Honor. We also have Suicide is Not the Answer. And we implore you to submit your stories and essays, poetry, and prose today. Visit GumboForTheSoulInternational.com for more details, or email GumboForTheSoulInternational@gmail.com. Now, welcome back, Darian. Let me ask you this. How important do you think it is to engage your readers?
Well, I think engagement is very important because I think that's the, you know, that has to be a component in order for the book to be enjoyable or for you to learn from what you're reading. So I think mm-hmm. that's the number one. I think that depends, and that's why you have to always think about your audience, you know, and who you're writing the book for, and so that you can have that engagement piece there.
Spot on. Who are you writing the book for? That is one of the main questions when I consult with anyone. Who is your target audience? Mm-hmm. What message mm-hmm. are you conveying to them? Now, who are some of your favorite authors?
I'm a huge John Maxwell.
All right.
John Maxwell, The Leadership.
Motivation.
Mm-hmm. Also, Malcolm Gladwell. As well, I talk about him in my book. I have a mentor leader. She's a writer. Her name was Dr. Stacia Pierce. She does a lot of entrepreneur for women business books. Those are kind of my top three. The funny part is I don't read like novels. I know I'm an English teacher, and it's the weirdest thing. I mean, I like novels. I've read all the classics, but as far as like reading, I'm more of an informational reader.
Right.
You know, I love information. Mm-hmm. So like, literally right now, and so I'm reading, I don't know, but those are like my favorite. And also Daniel Coyle is another author that he wrote a book called Talent Code. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. But yeah, so those are some of
I'm
my...
Not.
Yeah, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of my favorite.
No, but
I'm saying those are some of my favorite, well, authors in a sense of that. But I read a lot of speeches, and I'm doing a lot of biographies, and so a lot of times those authors aren't like well known authors. Because I'm reading Mary McLeod Bethune's biography is by someone, George Washington Carver, Booker T. Washington. Like, I love those, and I've been reading, actually, this is my second or third time reading some of those, Coretta Scott King's. So those are not, the authors are not necessarily, like, well-known authors, but the book, the genre is what I appreciate reading. So just to name, again, I'm not too sure of those, them as authors, but those books and what I'm reading now, those biographies are really where I'm headed now, just studying, you know, the people of old, you know, those people that, you know, I want to walk the same path. So that's kind of where I am with that in a sense. So I say that.
All right. Interesting, interesting. You know, for a long time, I would only read nonfiction, and I'm still strictly a nonfiction. I'm maybe not as informational or, you know, not as in depth as far as research, but it's like I enjoy a plethora of content, but it's strictly, you know, nonfiction. Educational, memoirs, that sort of thing. not a fictional character, you know, reader where I gravitate to, you know, different novels or romance or, you know, I'm very strict about the genres that I pick and choose to read.
Yeah.
And I do enjoy poetry and speeches as well. What piece of advice would you give an aspiring or first-time writer as an author, as a two-time author yourself?
Well, what I would say, and this is something that I had to understand, I think writing, people should just write because they love to write in general. You know, just keep writing, whatever it is, whether you're writing your feelings or just your thoughts or your ideas or revelation or something you get from you know, a movie or whatever, just write. So I'm always a supporter of people just writing, even if there isn't a target. But for those that are, you know, maybe trying to come out with content, you think about what it is that you, and even though I had to think about my audience, I still have to have a passion about what I was writing about. So before I could think about what type of teachers, I still nailed down, okay, I'm a writer and this is in my heart. And I can write this out because it's in my heart. And, it, you know, I have some experience here, and I want to get this information to teachers. And so I would just, you know, I would just always push writing. And as you continue to grow, you can kind of, you know, condense it or kind of structure it, you know, to something that, okay, now we're making sense. Now I can pull together chapters and, you know, what am I trying to say? What kind of voice am I trying to have? So I always push just write. Like I said, I've been writing since I was little, stuff that didn't matter, stuff that did matter, just getting it out. But initially you get a passion for something, and there maybe there's somebody you want to help or something you want to do or a voice you want to get out there. And so you just write because it's in you. I really do believe that. I mean, you can take writing classes. I, you know, I'm not opposed to that. I mean, I was an English major, so I took writing courses and things. But a lot of my writing did not necessarily come from me learning it in a classroom, but more so it came out of me. You know, it's just you write what you feel, you write what you think, you write what you're trying to convey. So coupled with, you know, you can couple your natural writing with, you know, some lessons if you want to work on grammar and, you know, all that punctuation and just how to give details, how to elaborate on your writing, how to keep it focused and organized. But, you know, until that part comes, you just continue to write, you know, every single day or whenever you get that inspiration to do so, you continue to write. And then the formal part will come, but you don't really want to have the formal part without what's really in you, because then you're just going to be writing something for somebody else or just trying to sound right or trying to write about a topic because everybody else and this is where the money is. You don't want to get to that point. But if you start writing organically and then allow the formal part, the structure part to come later, I think you'll be in good hands.
Well, amen to that. You know, excuse me, and one of the critical pieces of advice that I like to offer as well as take for myself is do not write and edit at the same time. Just write and get it out.
Yeah.
Because if you're writing and editing, you're constantly going back over and you're really misjudging what you're putting out there and not trusting the way it came out the first time. So it's very important for a writer to just pour it all out there, have your peace of mind and your comfort, you know, as one of the top priorities for writing so that you're comfortable and you're able to flow. But I do encourage people to get it all out and do not edit and write at the same time. And once you have written your manuscript or your book, not only do you want to have someone else read and offer editing suggestions, but at some point you actually have to stop editing, stop rewriting, and come to a point of conclusion, a point of this is as concrete and concise as I can convey this message, and you have to release it. Because, like, I have a client now, I wanted him to go back over his manuscript one more time, as I'm doing. And he said if he goes back over it again, he's just going to wind up rewriting. And I'm like, well, we don't want that. You know, we definitely, I'm not going to push you, you know, because, you know, he did release it. And that is like one of the other blocks that I think holds up the process when someone doesn't release their baby. I know it's your baby, it's in good hands, but release it, let it go, and let someone else look at it and read it and offer some feedback. Now, what are some challenges you faced as a writer, and are there things that you would do differently?
One of the biggest challenges I faced, I mean, outside of just not having ideas come like you, the writer's block, that whole thing. I mean, it was a little bit of a challenge with this last book because I started kind of researching other books by educators and looking at other teachers and, you know, the books coming out and, you know, all these pages and they were so, you know, they had the academia, the tech, you know, the terminology, and, you know, one person was a professor. So, you know, I'm just looking at all that. Does my book sound educational? Is it too, you know, so I allowed that to get to me a little bit. And so I struggled with writing and being happy with what I was producing. And so it took me a while to kind of get over that and just say, hey, this is it. This is me. This is the best that I can offer. Like you said, you got to come to that point where I was like, listen, here, you know what I'm saying? This is the final straw. You know, stop taking stuff out. Stop thinking that it's not working. Stop looking at how many chapters so-and-so have, and you only got this. You know, all of that kind of played a role in this book because I was a little, I mean, it can be a little bit scary coming out with a book because you're coming out with parts of who you are. You know, like you putting yourself out there and people are going to kind of judge you, you know, especially in the education world or, you know, the academic world, you know, college, okay, she's a teacher, and, you know, is this good enough, you know, how's a teacher writing this, and this, you know, all these thoughts were going in my mind, and I had to get that out and just write the book, get, you know, other people's opinions and editing going on, you know, just say, okay, I'm going to take this out and just write from what I was, just write from the heart, but also write what I thought, what I wanted to put out there, and I wanted to help the education system and do what I know, you know, so this is me, this is my path, this is what I have to offer. So other people have different things to offer. That's why we got 10 million books out. So you write what you have to offer. And so, but no, literally, it was tough. It was tough. And I also had some challenges with the physical part of it, with getting it created and made and formatted. I had some issues there, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, had a deadline for me. You know, I went through all of that with this, you know, the latest book. It wasn't. The writing was tough. You know, I had my little diagram up for a while, just looking at it in my room, and I just hadn't had anything. You know, I wasn't coming up with things, and I just had to just let it flow. And so it took a little bit longer, but I got it and got through the process of all the technical, you know, difficulties, and the book came out. You know, so but I definitely went through that process of, you know, questioning your own credibility and creativity and worth and value. All of that happens. What it happens to me when you talk, because writing is really, like I said, it's really an expression of you to a certain extent, you know. And so this is like you, like your name is on this, and you put it out to the world to see. It's like your voice, and you know, so many things. You can have critics and stuff happening, and so. But, you know, but nothing compared to the feeling of having it, you know, come out. And I was very happy that I got through all of that and just went head on and, you know, got it published. And now, you know, I'm in prayers that it's helping educators and those that it was meant to help. So, you know, that's all I can, you know, ask for.
Amen to that. Well, amen to that. If you help one person, it becomes worth it, I feel, for me and what I put out. And one of the things is that, you know, you did hit on some very touchy points. We do tend to compare and doubt our own voice and what we have been charged with, what God has given us. We have to write what we know and not compare ourselves in our voice, but it is one of those challenges when you're putting yourself in a vulnerable situation to be critiqued, if you will.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm,
if
yeah.
someone's going to be critiquing you and your work and your perspective, you do want to make sure that, you know, you've given it as much attention and it have, you know, presented it as worthy of reading as possible. You acquiesce
mm-hmm.
to a high standard for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And when you acquiesce
mm-hmm.
to a high standard for yourself, you will be more critical and more judgmental because of the, you want it to be, you want your work or you to be received with value. And
mm-hmm.
some of the challenges for anyone in terms of putting themselves in that vulnerable space is to validate, well, what makes me the authority to write this?
Mm-hmm,
well,
mm-hmm.
do your research and see, you know, why others have written on that
mm-hmm.
subject. And
mm-hmm.
you can very well find something that has been left out that you would be that missing piece and
mm-hmm.
bring forth that knowledge and that perspective that someone else did not. And I don't care who they are. They could be the most accomplished person or, you know, a child, but out of the mouth of babes. So you just never know. But the one thing is to trust yourself, trust what lies within. And when you can
mm-hmm.
trust what lies within and you go to that space and, you know, like you were saying, you were looking up on, you know, your board and your, you know, how you're structuring your work. If you, if anyone
mm-hmm.
Has a vision board or, you know, put notes up where how they want to structure
mm-hmm.
Their
mm-hmm.
chapters and what have you,
mm-hmm.
I encourage anyone
mm-hmm.
to be visual with that, you know, and all
mm-hmm.
it takes is, you know, you can use a piece of paper per chapter and you can, you know, you can start off with six chapters. Okay, my book is going to be six chapters. Okay, one, two,
mm-hmm.
three, four, five,
mm-hmm.
six. Six pieces of paper
mm-hmm.
up on my board. Now, what are the titles of said chapters? What are the contents?
Mm-hmm.
And then just work and matriculate and go from there as you reflect on what you're writing about, or if it's yourself and your memoir, which is where I tend to dwell with my clients.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, you pour out in that regard and make it stick, you know, and just come
yeah.
from that best place of your
mm-hmm.
own, you know, personal perspective. Come from that organic area that only you have. Now,
mm-hmm.
before we get ready to wind up out of here, do you have any upcoming events? Well, first of all, I know you're a teacher. You've said
mm-hmm.
that because some of the things that I wanted to, that I do ask other people is whether they write full-time, but I do know that you're not a full-time writer because you are
mm-hmm.
an educator. But how
mm-hmm.
much time would you say that you do get the opportunity now that you know, you're not, like you said earlier, when they would check on you because you were writing all the time. Well, obviously you can't
mm-hmm.
write all the time now because you're actually teaching.
Yeah.
But what percentage
mm-hmm.
of the time would you say you are able to, you know, steal away? If it would help someone who thinks that they don't have time to write, well, here you are, a full-time teacher, I believe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that
mm-hmm.
means you're away from home all day and then you bring
oh,
work
yeah.
home to correct.
Mm-hmm.
So when do you
mm-hmm.
find time to write?
Typically, to be honest, I don't write as much as I would like to because it really is a time, but I do steal away time at night, weekday night, to, again, a journal. So I at least get to write in a journal every night before I go to sleep, amidst all the stuff that I have to do. So I still keep in the journal, and mostly
mm-hmm.
weekends are my times to really write. And so that's when I was writing the book, was mostly happening on the weekends. So now I can use Saturdays and Friday nights even sometimes. So Saturdays and Sunday mornings, I'm able to kind of catch up with the writing and do the, you know, write from. Because, again, I'm working on other projects, so that's when I do most of my writing now, on Saturdays, maybe Friday night and Sunday mornings. So I have some time. You can make time because you don't have to write for long. You know, you can just 15, 20 minutes of writing a day can kind of keep you going, you know, to where you want to kind of keep up the habit and the process. But for me, like I said, when I was writing the book, because I was full-fledged in school still, and I did very busy days and very long, sometimes 16-hour days, but I used most of the weekends to actually write the book. So you can make time. Sometimes I know a couple of times I can't write in the morning time, but I have like 3 or 4 o'clock mornings, and so that doesn't happen a lot, but I can steal away a little bit of time in the morning. But at nighttime, I definitely get time to write. In my journal at least, and then again, like I said, I can work on projects and do some writing on the weekends, although I'm a full-time teacher.
Awesome. Well, do you have any events coming up in terms of your writing, anything that you want our listeners to know about before we sign off?
Well, no, I don't have any. I'm working on things, but they're not etched in stone yet, but just looking to have a book tour coming up in February. So, with the just touring around with the actual book, Teacher Authority, and being able to work through the book and work with teachers and workshops and things of that, that's what we're working on now. But as far as that, just getting, information out there, just getting the books, book information, just trying to help as many schools and teachers that I can.
Awesome. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
I'm on Instagram at Teach Miss Tanner. So that's Teach, T-E-A-C-H, Miss, M-S, Tanner, T-A-N-N-E-R. And so that's Instagram as well as Twitter. And Facebook is just my first and last name, Darian, D-A-R-R-I-A-N, Tanner, T-A-N-N-E-R. So I'm on Instagram and
awesome.
Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so very much for opening up the premiere season 2 of A Book Is Born right here on Tribe Family Channel. It's been an honor, privilege, and a pleasure to speak with you, to spend Friday with you. And I just want to say happy holidays and happy new year. 2020 is going to be an amazing year for everyone. And so
I wish you all
the best. I believe
yes,
it,
thank
too.
You.
And I'm wishing you all the best. Don't be a stranger. You're always welcome to come back on Tribe Family Channel. And again,
thank you once again,
Darian, for being our guest on A Book Is Born, this season 2 premiere.
Thank you for having me. Like I said, I appreciate the opportunity.
Wonderful. Now, for all of you, and you as well, Darian, and our listeners, you can actually listen to the replay of this broadcast via our studio at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. Darian, I'm looking forward to you participating in our series anthologies, Gumbo for the Soul, The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. We'll be announcing a call for submissions for the second installment in that series. But in the meantime, you can visit GumboForTheSoulInternational.com and learn about our current open calls for submissions. And until then, have a blessed evening and happy new year to you and yours.
Thank you. Same to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Happy birthday. Yeah. We want to dedicate this song to everyone who has a birthday today. And that means you, and you, and you, and you. Because having a birthday is a special occasion. And we hope you have a happy celebration and many, many more to come.